With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the WEEI Celtics podcast powered by CLNS Radio. I am Jared Weiss, joined by Mr. Barnaby over here, Samuel Packard. What's going on?
Not much. Everything's going well. I'm excited for today's episode of the podcast. We're going to be joined by Comcast Sportsnet's Kyle Draper, and then my sit-down interview with my favorite presidential candidate, Evan Turner.
Who I think is the one that will cause a change for America. That will save this country.
If anyone's going to make America great again, it's probably ET. So we make sure you tune in for that interview. That's at the end. But first, we talk to Kyle. But actually, first, we got to talk a little bit about the Clippers game last night.
As we say in the business.
That is technical lingo. I learned that at the Connecticut School of Broadcasting.
Oh, wow, great education there. So the Clippers game, an incredible, memorable contest between the Celtics and the Clippers in what could have been Paul Pierce's final game. There probably was not a dry eye in the house as he walked away, although he didn't leave like someone that was clearly having their last go around in the Garden.
Oh, no, he left real casually, had headphones on. He didn't really care. He seemed like he'll be back. A lot of people saying it's going to be his last game, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him play again next year and come. He made some couple threes. He's still somewhat effective as a role player. I just think he's the type of player who loves the game too much and isn't going to go out. We've seen KG holding on year after year. I think the truth still has some heart left in him. It's probably another season.
I mean, he could be at least a corner three-point shooter next year at the end of a roster. And I think he knows that someone will still pay him whatever the Vetman will be, $3 million probably.
Didn't he
for
a,
him.
A multi-year deal with the Clippers, or am I crazy?
Oh, that's no, you're right. That's true. So then that would be the ones that would pay him. So, and it's Doc. So he knows that they will obviously want him back next year to at least, if he's not going to be playing every single night, just at least be there to be a coach. And Doc said that Paul is basically his mouthpiece on the court, that he is the one motivating the team in the same way, barking out orders. He knows the system. I mean, we saw a lot of the stuff that they run is very similar to the stuff that they ran when the big three was here. And they don't even have Blake Griffin out there that I think would fill a lot of this, a role that KG filled for that team. But Paul functions really well as a player coach on that team. And you saw that. Once they get Blake back, assuming they get Blake back, they're talented enough to compete for the title. Obviously, the Warriors are on a different level, and the Spurs are on a different level that's probably just below them. But anything could happen out there, whether it's injuries or just a poor run of form. And the Clippers look like a team that will be able to pounce.
And they've played the Warriors probably better than anyone, aside from the Celtics.
Which Doc will be quick to remind you of course.
Yeah, but they've lost every single time against the Warriors, but they've been very close games. My biggest takeaway about the Clippers from last night's game was J.J. Redick.
Yep.
He was simply unguardable for stretches of that game, and I've kind of disliked J.J. because he's a white dookie, but I respect his game thoroughly, and it's got a pretty decent podcast going on. I now know exactly what his sleeve tattoo means. Mm-hmm. But there are some points in that game where he was coming off two screens and both Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart were scrambling to guard him, just completely abandoning Mamba Mute, which, as they should. But he still got shots off, and I think he was just so much more impressive than I thought he was. And they certainly have a chance against the Warriors. I'm not going to say they're doing it. They're going to do it. Their depth is certainly an issue when you're starting Mamba Mute. But I was very impressed by the Clippers last night, especially when Chris Paul can go off for that many points.
You know, JJ is reminding me a lot of Ray Allen right now. I mean, I'd say maybe more latter stage Ray Allen when he wasn't as dominant with the ball. But he is so good moving around the court. You know, he's playing at kind of the same level like Kyle Korver was playing at a year ago, and it's something that only, as we see with Kyle Korver, it's really hard to pull that off. It's like almost impossible to pull it off. But he just moved, every step is with purpose with JJ. His body positioning coming off of screens, just he has such great awareness of how his body's positioned and how far he is from the rim. It's so exciting to see shooters play, you know, kind of play at that level. And there's usually only one or two guys in the league every single year that are doing it. And then this year, although Kevin Durant, I guess, would be the third, but it's Redick and it's Curry that are doing that this year.
And his athleticism is just unbelievable. He's relentless. I haven't seen Avery Bradley or Marcus Smart struggle to guard anyone on the perimeter as much as they had or did last night with J.J. Redick. And there were many times where he was pretty well open for shots, which is, I certainly was surprised, because you think about the Celtics and you think of their strength is perimeter defense. But the combination of Chris Paul, who they're kind of sagging off and letting him take the outside shot, and J.J. Redick was certainly impressive last night.
All right, enough praising one of our now podcast competitors.
Oh, which, yeah.
By the way, once you're done listening to this podcast, you got to check out Redick's podcast. It's, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's the most amazing flow of any podcast I've listened to, like compared to ours.
I was impressed.
But it's good. He's good for an active NBA player who hasn't been practicing doing this for a living like we have for a while. I mean, the guy's good at what he's doing, and he's an NBA player. He's a really smart one, so he has a lot of great stuff to talk about. I've been enjoying that so far.
And his first guest was Jared Dudley, who's one of the best people to talk to in the league. Anyone could talk to Jared Dudley for an hour, and it would probably be entertaining. The Celtics need to trade for Jared Dudley so we're more entertained, because that guy's one of the best NBA minds. But that's enough about J.J. Redick and enough about the Clippers. Actually not, because we're about to talk to Kyle Draper, and our first question to him was about that Clippers game.
So Kyle Draper from Comcast Sports in New England, what were your thoughts when they went down in the beginning of overtime and it looked like the Clippers were just going to run away with it?
You know, I felt bad for Avery Bradley again. I thought, you know, for the second time in less than a week, he was going to be the GOAT. I mean, think about it. He fouled J.J. Redick on a three-pointer. J.J. got the three and the one. And then next position down, he fouled him on a three. And I thought, oh, man, Avery Bradley, you just spotted him 6 points. And it was interesting, though, because I should have known better, because this Celtics team, man, they always battle back. But I thought the Clippers, if you look at the Clippers here recently, this is what they do. The Clippers have been really good at closing out games over the last couple of weeks. And I just thought CP3, Redick, those guys would take over. But once again, the Celtics, man, they're learning how to close out games. They're battling back. And you're right, that was an incredible atmosphere and so many big shots as well. And I don't think any defense was being played out there. That's just my opinion. I mean, when you give up that many points, but you don't see that too often, a good old-fashioned shootout like we used to have back in the day.
And what was amazing was you're going up against a team with J.J. Redick was on fire and Chris Paul was on fire. I mean, Jamal Crawford threw up some awful shots, but he still is bound to make a few plays happen. But the Celtics had the guys that they wanted to be their three-point shooters hitting those shots. And whether it was Solinger or Bradley or Marcus, they were missing their shots. After a hot start, they started missing their shots, but were able to pick it back up. And that's something we haven't really seen them do. It tends to be either a hot start and then it just it kind of consistently falls off the map as far as shooting is concerned, or the opposite way.
Yeah, I mean, this team is so hot and cold usually when it comes to shooting. It's amazing. You know, one game they'll go 10 of 15 or something like that, 12 of 25, or, you know, too close to 50%, then the next game we'll have like a 3 of 19 or a 6 of 19 or something like that. And you're right about that. They started off hot, like you said. They were knocking down the threes. Third quarter, they took maybe some ill-advised threes, but then there were a couple of no, 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 don't take this. Okay, good shot moments in that game. Like the Solinger one, he was wide open, but when's the last time Solinger hit a three? I mean, he's been awful from behind the arc this season. And so they hit some timely three-pointers. Jay Crowder, once again, we know about him and the three-point shot and especially the timely threes. And so you're right about that. It's interesting that the Celtics were the ones making the big shots. And I think that goes to show you just where this team is at right now. Because we talk, oh, they don't have a closer. They don't have that one guy. Well, we saw last night, they had a number of guys that hit big shots down the stretch.
How valuable is a guy like Evan Turner? He didn't really do much in the first four quarters, and then in overtime where Isaiah only scored 2 points, Turner scores seven straight. How much do you think that helps Isaiah, especially in crunch time where he doesn't have to be the guy at every single possession?
You know, that's a good point, because I asked Brad Stevens about this last week. We were talking about the rotations, and I asked him about the end-of-game rotations where he runs that lineup of Marcus Smart, Evan Turner, and Isaiah Thomas out there at times. And then even they go even smaller and throw out an Avery Bradley or something like that. And he said the reason he does that is he likes to have multiple pick-and-rolls. He likes to run multiple pick-and-rolls in any given set. And I've been telling guys all season long, Evan Turner is a valuable member of this team. You know, sure, he may have some nights where, you know, he turns the ball over or the shot's not going. Obviously, he's struggling from three-point line this season. But down the stretch, one-on-one, Evan Turner can take almost anybody in the league. And we saw that last night there against the Clippers. It was Evan Turner who, you know, had like three buckets in a row, I think it was, for the Celtics. And so Evan doesn't lack confidence. You guys know that. Y'all see him in the locker room. And so this wasn't some sort of breakthrough moment for him. This dude thinks he could do that every single game. And so that's why I think he's such a valuable piece on this team, because it's not just on Isaiah down the stretch to create his own shot. Even though he did that last night against the Clippers, you know, going against DeAndre Jordan a couple of times. But I think Evan Turner down the stretch, that's when he's at his best.
I'm glad you bring up Evan Turner, because it's a good way for us to plug that we have an interview with him coming up after we're done with Drapes here. But
nice.
With Evan, he's someone that no matter how many shots he misses, he will go into his next shot with the absolute confidence that he is Michael Jordan reincarnated. And which I'm sure is a comparison that he would draw himself if he were here. But he, in that shot that he hit over DeAndre Jordan, he pulled up and didn't really rush his release. This was the one in overtime that really kind of opened up the lead for them. He didn't rush his release. He used his typical form. He didn't even take a high trajectory shot. It was kind of a low line drive shot. And that's with 7'12" DeAndre Jordan coming right at him there. And with Turner, it seems that his confidence in his dribbling skills has really improved to the point that he feels that he can take anybody. He'll throw a couple crossovers at them, a hesitation, but his step back is what really makes him effective, because just like Isaiah Thomas, he gets so much distance when he does those little hard drives and then step back crossovers, and he pulls into that shot, and it allows him to shoot comfortably. And like, how, you know, guys very rarely actually get rejected on jump shots, but guys will often rush their jump shots thinking that they're going to get rejected. And he doesn't even see the hands in his face. He just goes through it smoothly in one motion. And that's what I thought made him so effective at the end of the game there.
Yeah, and I think the game slows down for him there at the end. I mean, he always seems to be, you know, comfortable taking that last shot, taking a big shot. He gets to his spots. Mike Gorman said it on the broadcast, I think it was the other day, that Evan Turner knows exactly his spots on the floor. Sure, he's not a three-point shooter, and he honestly reluctantly takes those threes now. You see him hesitating sometimes out there on that three, but he knows, you know, from 15 to 17, he's money. And so the thing I like about Evan Turner's shot is, it's sort of a quick release, you know. It's like a deceptive quick release, you know. And he can get it off so fast that I think it catches, you know, defenders off guard a little bit. And you're right about that, man, when it comes to, you know, just him being confident, comfortable. Like I said, I feel like it slows down for him at the end. And outside of Isaiah Thomas, I thought last year Evan Turner was the Celtics' most valuable player. He was one of the biggest reasons that they made it to the playoffs last year. And so I'm glad he's still a part of this team, man, because I think they need somebody like that down the stretch late in games.
Is that going to continue after the trade deadline next season? I mean, what's the future hold for him?
That's a good question. His deal is up, right? He only signed a two-year deal with the Celtics. He's off the books. He becomes a free agent, if I'm correct, after this season.
That's
so
right.
Either if it's trade deadline or I would like to have Evan back, because to me this feels like the first time where he fits. You know, Indiana was not a good fit for him, obviously. I feel like they have a specific role for Evan on this team. And, I mean, think about it. He's a bench player, you know, averages double figures. You'll take it, you know. And so I think Evan Turner has found a home here with this Celtics team. With that being said, how much of a priority does Danny Ainge place on him this offseason? You know, you may have some bigger fish to fry, whether it's, you know, a rumored trade with Al Horford and trying to re-sign him or somebody else. But I would like to see Evan Turner back.
All right, I'm going to be the negative guy here. And
it's always one. There's always one out there.
Last night, Amir Johnson only played 14 minutes, and it seemed like a game where he could definitely use his defense, especially down the stretch where they're using Jerebko a lot on DeAndre Jordan. And this has been kind of a pattern for Amir Johnson where it seems like once every five games he'll play around 15 minutes. And I don't really understand it because I haven't heard anything, any injury updates or anything about his ankles. We all know that's been a problem for him. What's your thought on Amir Johnson's performance so far this season? Because when he plays well, the Celtics are usually winning that game, but then sometimes he's just not on the floor.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right. When he's, you know, putting up good numbers, the Celtics are usually, you know, at their best. And I just think Brad, you know, he has so many options. And let's be honest, Amir missed a couple of easy bunnies last night in that first half of that game, and even in the third quarter to start the third quarter. And so he didn't have it going. And I think the luxury Brad has is, you know, he can see throughout the game who has it going, who doesn't have it going. I mean, it was just a couple weeks ago when Kelly Olynyk, you know, only played a handful of minutes. Jared Sullinger only played 6 minutes, I think it was, in the second half of the game last week. And so I just think Brad, he rides whoever is playing well that game. Jerebko actually played a huge role in that game. He had a couple of back-to-back buckets. I think it was in the fourth quarter during that comeback there. And so it's interesting with Amir because they like him so much and they speak so highly of him. But then you see a game like last night and he doesn't play a whole lot. And so I don't know what to say about that. But I will say that's not surprising because when you look at this team, everything we've been saying all season long is they have so much depth. You know, guys 4 through 8 are interchangeable. 4 through 9 are, you know, interchangeable. And so Brad decided to roll the dice, and Amir wasn't getting it done last night. Let's just be honest. And it proved to be the right decision because I thought Jerebko made a couple of key plays late in that game.
How big of a role is health going to play down the stretch here? Because we see Jay Crowder has been dealing with an ankle issue. We know Amir Johnson is always going to be dealing with ankle issues. Kelly Olynyk has a shoulder subluxation that it's not clear how long he's going to miss. The team is getting beat up, and the depth has been really valuable. But there's especially with trade season only a week away, there's a chance that depth is going to be chipped away. I mean, what do the Celtics prioritize here from a health standpoint? Do they sacrifice rotational minutes for guys to make sure that they're playing a very light load and stay healthy?
Well, that's a good question because when you look at it, I mean, everybody on this team plays an integral part. I would feel like Marcus Smart, Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, and Jay Crowder are the guys that you need to be healthy. We saw earlier this season when Smart missed that extended time, the team, you know, was so inconsistent, was so up and down. We know about Isaiah Thomas and how valuable he is and Jay Crowder. And then if you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference, it seems like everybody's dealing with injuries, whether it's Chicago, you know, Kevin Love, the Cleveland, they say he's going to be okay, but injuries are huge. And so that's the one thing I think that could derail the Celtics' momentum here is injuries. And I was talking to Chris Mannix or Scal or somebody the other day, and I said, Isaiah Thomas, can he continue this heavy workload? Can he perform at this high level for 82 games? And so if I'm Brad Stevens, maybe I do reduce his workload, just maybe a game or two, do a Greg Popovich, you know, especially late in season when you feel like, you know, you're going to make the playoffs. And so maybe you try to rest him. Isaiah wouldn't like that. You know that, guys. He wants to play 48 minutes every single night. But that'll be interesting. I think health is an important factor. And how about Jay Crowder? You mentioned all his bumps and bruises and everything, but yet he started every game this season. I don't think Jay wants to miss a game. I mean, you got guys that want to be out there every single night. But Brad may have to, at some point, sit somebody down just because I just think Isaiah – and now he's in the All-Star game, so he's not really going to get a big break. And I just feel like, you know, it would be good for him to get maybe a game or two in the second half of the season.
So I have here written in my notes, IT the God. And he has been a godlike figure in Boston for the past few months. Something snapped in his brain where he realized it's like the Neo at the end of the Matrix with him, where he's just seeing everything in ones and zeros now. And his control on the ball, his control on the over a defense, he has just been toying with opponents in crunch time so frequently. I can't tell you how many game stories that I've written, I'm sure Sam has written, where the lead is IT bails out the Celtics again. IT comes through in the clutch. IT pretty much puts the offense on his tiny little shoulders at the end of the game.
We do a studs and duds column, and I had to stop making Isaiah Thomas the stud just because it was so boring to write the same thing every single night.
He's a stud. He's a thoroughbred. And he has been so great. And I'm even thinking about whether he's going to be getting MVP votes at the end of the season. I mean, fifth place MVP votes. Don't forget, you get to select five guys up there. So he's definitely not up in that top class. But he has been so incredibly valuable for this team, and he's been that catalyst that kept the team afloat when Smart went down, and Smart is such a crucial part of their identity as a team. But then when Smart got back into his rhythm, and Isaiah continued to dominate offensively, we've seen them go on this incredible run that's propelled them to the top of the East.
And you guys remember early in the season, before the season, everybody was saying Isaiah's best suited coming off the bench. We don't know if he can, you know, play big minutes and defend, you know, starting point guards and all this and all that. And he's just laughed at us. He's made us look like fools. And the thing about Isaiah that surprises me is we saw him matched up against DeAndre Jordan, and he just took it right to DeAndre. He had a couple of buckets late, you know, the step back, like you mentioned with Evan Turner. I mean, and Isaiah, I think, is one of the toughest people to guard because he has every trick in the book. He'll pull up from three from you. He'll, you know, stop and pop. He'll take it all the way to the hole. He finishes excellent in traffic. And so I just think this Isaiah Thomas situation is perfect for him. Think about it. Everywhere he's been, he's had to either share the starting, you know, share the load or at least, you know, subvert his game back a little bit. In Sacramento, we all know, is DeMarcus Cousins' team. Even down there in Phoenix, they had Dragic and Bledsoe. And so I just think this is the first time where it's Isaiah's team, and he's taking the ball and run with it this season.
It was funny. He was asked last night about the kind of current situations in Sacramento and Phoenix and if he's happy to be in Boston right now. And he let out one of those smirks, and he just gave a nice deflected answer and just said he was happy to be where he was. But you can tell he's much happier. And every single interview you hear him do, he talks about how the Celtics have just let him be him. And it's amazing. I'm shocked he actually made that shot against DeAndre Jordan last night in the fourth quarter. And some of the times he finishes around the rim, I just don't know how you practice that. Like, the angles he is able to manipulate the ball to go into the basket is absurd. And it just, at this point, it just doesn't really make sense. And I'm constantly amazed by him. And the knock on him as the starter, or at least to begin the season, was he's not that good on defense. He's going to be exploited. And I think he's really improved his defense this year, especially positionally. He's always in the passing lanes and he's getting his hands there. There's going to be times where he's posted up, and we've seen teams kind of get out of their offense to focus all their attention on posting up Isaiah. But his defensive improvement has been one of the reasons why Jared can even say something as absurd as getting an MVP vote.
and here's the thing, and it's not only Isaiah, and I do give him a lot of credit defensively, but this Celtics team is so great at deflections, getting the hands or balls in the passing lanes, trying to, you know, especially early on this season, they were great at stopping opposing guards from getting into the lane. They've slipped back in that area a little bit. But I just think the Celtics team defense, even though they gave up, you know, a million points against the Clippers, I just think that the Celtics team defense allows them to keep Isaiah out there. I mean, we saw a couple of times where teams went right at Isaiah early on, and I'm trying to remember the game, but they took Isaiah down low on the post three or four times in a row. It might have been that Knicks game. It was with Aaron Aflalo. Aaron Aflalo just abused him down low on the first few possessions, and so Brad had to take him out early. But you're right about the defense. I mean, it hasn't been the liability so many people predicted.
Well, and a lot of people just look at Isaiah's stature, and they think about just the idea of everyone's going to be able to shoot over him and stuff like that. But that pretty much has not happened at all. I mean, he's never really giving up more than 4 to 5 inches on an opposing point guard. So he's done a really good job of working on his feet positioning, while being an on-ball defender. And he's just so good at recovering against other guys. He's so, I mean, he's one of the most agile players in the last probably decade in the NBA. But they've done a good job strategically of hiding him when they need to on defense, mm-hmm. trying to get him away from pick and rolls where he gets exposed, because the team switches a lot on pick and rolls and he ends up on big men that are able to post him and kind of run through him into the lane. They've done a really good job of hiding him in the corner, stuff like that. But he's stepped up whenever he's needed to, and he had to step up a lot defensively in that Clipper game, and he held his own regardless of whether he was on Chris Paul getting switched onto off guards. He's shown that effort is the most important thing on defense. It's more important than size, athleticism. It's really all about effort and intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. And that's that toughness that he has, too. I mean, that competitiveness. I mean, it's nobody wants to get abused defensively out there. And he's a tough guy, you know. I mean, how many times have we seen him sky on the inside for rebounds, you know, with bigger guys in there? And we're like, how did Isaiah come up with that rebound? And I just think that's his competitiveness and that chip on his shoulder, man. You talk about his drives to the basket. I mean, there was one time, I think he got it at about half court, and he just exploded, you know, three dribbles and then exploded to the rim. And so it's just that fearlessness, man, that toughness that he plays with out there.
All right, the Celtics are 13-4, I believe, in their last 17 games, and one of the major reasons has been the improved play of Marcus Smart. Now, there's been all this talk about the snow day practice, where all of a sudden he turned into a mythical three-point shooter. Is that the real Marcus Smart? What can we expect from him moving forward? It's not like he takes the best shots. He takes a lot of kind of circus threes, but they happen to go in. What do you think we can expect from Smart from the offensive end for the rest of the season?
No, I don't want to call him a, you know, Kyle Korver or anything like that now, you know, just because he's been on this nice roll the last couple of weeks. No doubt he's improved that three-point shooting, but I need to see more. You know, to me it's still too small of a sample size. I mean, we saw Kelly Olynyk, who was he shooting, you know, 50% since December 1st, and so I'm still not thinking Kelly's a 50% three-point shooter, but, you know, with Marcus Smart, that's going to be key. I think the key for him, though, is because he's always taken the three, guys. Let's not get it twisted. He's always felt like he could knock down the three, but I like the fact now that he's not just relying solely on the three-point shot as his only means of offense. I mean, he's getting into the lane a lot more here over the last couple of weeks, and that's the thing I'm most impressed with. He's been knocking down that corner three, no doubt about that, and the late in the shot clock three that he's been knocking down. But I still need to see a little bit more before I just go ahead and say he's a 40% three-point shooter, you know, throughout the season.
Well, he is shooting 38% in six games in February, so that's definitely a nice start there. I liked in the Clipper game, he had one play where he was streaking as like a trail in transition, and they like threw him a pass. It was like a lead pass in stride. He caught it and stepped like really hard into the three and nailed it with a guy in his face. And we usually see him taking either spot up threes or off the dribble threes. He doesn't get to step into a three that often. So I think the team is starting to figure out ways to get him better 3-point looks, as opposed to him either getting, you know, having to dribble, kind of like taking a three as like a bailout after a failed dribble drive, or just being stuck in the corner.
Yeah, and that goes back to his confidence, too. I mean, the dude is confident. I think everybody on this team is confident in their shot. Even Sullinger, let's be honest, those first couple of months of the season, the guy was in a rut big time. But here, over the last 2 weeks or so, he's really been knocking down the long two-point jumper. And so I just think everybody's confidence is high right now. You know, Jay Crowder, we saw him in December, you know, crushing it at the three-point line, and now his confidence is high. And it's a wonder, you know, what confidence does for a ball player, because if you don't think you're going to miss, you know, a lot of times you'll knock down shots and improve your percentage, and that's what we're seeing from the Celtics.
All right, Kyle, you've been around this team for a while, and this is a question I've been thinking about a lot over the past couple of weeks. You talk about the confidence and the kind of camaraderie between this team. Do you think this team has a go-to leader? Is there one guy in the locker room who they all turn to? Because I've been thinking about it, and no one really stands out as the person.
No, I don't think there's one voice of the locker room, one guy who, you know, is that guy that you know, is the leader in there. I will say I feel like they have several leaders. I think Marcus Smart is a leader. We heard it last year, even his rookie season, you know, how talkative he was, how much of a leader he was. Isaiah Thomas, obviously. And don't sleep on Jay Crowder as a leader. I mean, I just think, you know, no one's really afraid to speak up on this team. It was interesting. A couple of weeks ago, they had been struggling and had lost a game or two, and they had a conference call before the game, you know, the night before the game, to hammer things out and talk about how big this upcoming game was. And I just think, you know, it's a team full of guys who aren't afraid to get on each other. We mentioned Jay. We mentioned Isaiah. I think Evan Turner, even to an extent, you know, he's a veteran inside the locker room. I would imagine Avery is probably one of the quieter ones. He probably leads by example. But they don't have that one guy, but they got a few guys, I feel like, that aren't afraid to step up and talk.
Tell me about this conference call. This is the first I'm hearing about this. What went down?
Yeah,
there?
I'm trying to figure out which game it was. It was sometime in January. My mind is killing me right now, but it was the day before a game, and I don't know if they had lost one in a row, no, back-to-back games, two in a row, three in a row, whatever it was.
So it's a long time ago then.
Yeah, this was like, I think, early January it might have been. And, yeah, they had a conference call, you know, the night before a game. And they just talk about, all right, this is a big game, guys. What do we need to do? And this was a players-only kind of thing. This wasn't a coaching-initiated thing. And so ask Evan Turner about it. I can't remember which game it was, but I heard it about a month or so ago, a little more than a month ago. And so, and then they came out and they won the game. And so it's that shows you how close this team is, how tight-knit this team is.
It's something that I think the players have generally reflected is that they do spend, I think they spend enough time with each other that the chemistry shows because there's just kind of that ingrained communication ability. And it's something that you get when you actually spend time off the court, for instance, Cleveland Cavaliers, or you actually trust each other beyond just like the, oh, I'm going to make the pass kind of level, but that you're going to make the right decision, that you're in the right mindset, that you've prepared. And that's the big thing that this team seems to have over last year's teams and other teams around the league. Is I think there's a level of confidence in each other's preparedness and kind of level of focus. And that's something that you don't really think about from an X's and O's standpoint, is how important is that, just to know that the other guy out there is going to make the right play, and that makes you more confident to stay at home or on your side of the play, or just to do your small part of the play.
Yeah, you mentioned that trust that they have for each other. And also, I might add, because there's no superstar on this team, you don't have to walk on eggshells around each other. I mean, think about it. When Rajon Rondo was here, you know, guys were afraid to be themselves, I feel like, around that team early last season. And so you don't have to walk on eggshells with this group. You're not, you know, afraid of anybody. It's no one's team. You know, it's Brad's team, Danny's team. It's not a player's team. You know, I look at a team like Cleveland. Let's say LeBron was on Boston, it would be LeBron's team, and guys would walk on eggshells around him and be afraid of LeBron. I mean, I don't feel like these guys are afraid of each other, and I think it helps, it manifests itself out on the court, that trust factor.
Kyle, you must be a multimedia professional, because that's the perfect segue. We have to talk to you about the trade deadline. It's only a week away. Do you think the Celtics need to make a deal? Do you think they should go out and add someone at risk of losing that chemistry that they have right now?
That's a great question, because I feel like if they want to be considered true contenders in the Eastern Conference, really a legitimate team chance to make the NBA Finals, they do need to make a move. Everybody's talking about Al Horford. I would love Al Horford, because I feel like they need better production from their four and five spots. If you look at it, this team is so guard-heavy and guard-oriented. I think a reliable scorer in the front court, a guy like Al Horford, I'm not saying 25 points per game, 15, 16 every given night. Right now, they really don't have that. Some nights, Sullinger, some nights, Amir, maybe Kelly, you know. And so it would be nice where it wasn't, you know, just strictly the guards doing all the scoring. And with that being said, Al Horford's about to be a free agent. Maybe you try to get him in free agency. The thing is, if you're Boston, you have to try and get somebody in the fold, however, before free agency hits. because they haven't been able to sign a major free agent. And so let's say you trade for Al Horford. That would give you the inside track to re-sign him this offseason. And so you may have to tinker with the chemistry now to be better not only this year but in the future as well. And so I can't see them landing a major free agent. And so the only way to get a big-name guy like that, to get a proven all-star, is to make a trade. And so that's the thing about Danny Ainge. Like, he even admitted a month ago that he didn't think this was a championship-caliber team. He may have changed his opinion, you know, a little bit with this recent play. But if it's not a championship-caliber team, you have to put yourself in position to become a championship-caliber team. And how do you do that? If you're the Celtics, it's by way of trade. It's definitely not by way of free agency, because we haven't seen that happen for this team in forever. So if there's a big deal to be made, if I'm Danny Ainge, I'm pulling the trigger. If there's an Al Horford you can acquire, I'm pulling the trigger on it.
Well, you know, Danny Ainge also just said that he doesn't think the Hawks are going to be moving any of their guys. So I think Danny's making some diplomatic moves here to try to recalibrate the proposed asking price after that report of Justice Winslow for four draft picks kind of set the market for Ainge's assets.
Yeah, exactly. And I do know the Hawks and Celtics have had conversations, you know, but we're still a week away from the trade deadline, and so I think things will intensify. But if you're the Hawks, why blow it up right now? I mean, you're right there in the thick of things. Anything can happen. Outside of Cleveland, you probably can beat any team in the Eastern Conference. So who's to say Kyrie won't get hurt? Who's to say Love won't get hurt? LeBron or somebody like that. And so if I'm a team like the Atlanta Hawks or the Raptors or somebody that's right there, Miami, even the Celtics to an extent, if you're trying to compete this year, maybe you don't make a move. Like, I don't understand why Atlanta would, if they were the seventh or eighth seed or barely scraping by for a playoff spot, then I would try to blow it up, but I don't think now is the time to do it. I would maybe make some changes in the offseason if I'm them, but not right now.
All right, the latest rumor that's been out there is the Rockets are reportedly working on trades for Dwight Howard, trying to get him out of town. They figured out that him and Harden will not work together. Now, considering that, you think the asking price would be a little bit lower than Al Horford. Is there any reason why the Celtics should take a look at Dwight?
You know, I go back and forth on Dwight, to be honest with you, because I may be in a minority, but I actually like his game. I really, you know, I think defensively he's still very strong. Rebounding, we know about that. I even think he's a better offensive player than people give him credit for. But it's the other stuff I worry about him. His work ethic, his commitment to be great. Is he a team locker room kind of guy? And so that would be my reservations. Basketball-wise, I think it would be a great move. If you look at Detroit, and one of the things that Reggie Jackson said, you know, helps him the most is having a guy like Andre Drummond on a pick and roll, is that he can just throw a lob to, and teams have to account for him rolling it. Can you imagine Isaiah Thomas, Dwight Howard pick and roll? I mean, just how much attention you'd have to pay to both those guys. Think about it. If you got Isaiah coming down the on one side of the lane, Dwight rolling on the other, everybody has to collapse in the paint to try and defend that. And then you got shooters on the outside. You got Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, those guys on the outside. And so I think basketball-wise, it does make sense for this team. And one of the issues for the Celtics, their perimeter defense against, you know, some of the best guards in the league, I don't think they do a good job stopping penetration. And so when you got a guy like Dwight Howard back there who can block shots, I think it masks a lot of mistakes on the perimeter defensively. And so I think basketball-wise, I would try to make it happen. But it's the other stuff that comes with Dwight, the baggage, you know. Is he going to pout? Is he going to moan about shots? Is he not going to be a locker room guy? And so that's what I would worry about if I'm Danny Ainge.
I'm on board with you there. I think the only real concern with Dwight is in the locker room, because he would definitely change the way they run their offensive system, because their offensive system is so well built on having the bigs being able to move out to the 3-point line. And we know Dwight's not going to be able to rotate anywhere out beyond 15 feet. Although he can take a 15-foot jumper once in a while. The other question is health. He hasn't looked healthy for consistent stretches in a couple of years now, but he's still a great defender. He's still one of the best defenders in the NBA. And while people in Boston have gotten used to not having a great shot blocker underneath, and this team is thriving defensively without it, the team is thriving defensively because of how great they are on the perimeter, at least at forcing turnovers and exerting ball pressure. But when they get caught in 5-on-4 situations, the guys down low often have trouble making those stops. And you put in, you know, one of the best low post defenders in the last 20 years, who still is as good as he ever really has been at that. I mean, they're probably the best defensive team in the NBA, although the Warriors will definitely give them a run at that. But they would be incredible that way. It's just a matter of, it means that they have to be better at three-point shooting than they have been this year if they are going to adapt their offense to him. And then the question is, what personnel do they have to give up to get him? Because there's going to be a lot of situations where he's not going to be playing at the end of the game because of his poor free throw shooting. And we saw how that hurt the Clippers last night. And of course, that Detroit has gone through that, and Houston has gone through that this year. But Houston, it really seems like they're in a panic mode, and he could be available for a few draft picks and one good, you know, one solid young talent.
Yeah, and they don't use him properly out there in Houston. And I honestly, I didn't think Orlando used Dwight enough offensively down there. You know, the guy is shooting 60% from the field, but yet, you know, even in Orlando, he was third in shots or something like that. You know, Ryan Anderson was getting shots, the same amount of shots as Dwight Howard. And we see it in Houston. You know, he's really an afterthought offensively. And so I think you can, you know, everybody's talking, oh, he's only averaging 14 and whatever it is. I mean, to me, he's a 17 and 13 kind of guy, you know, in his sleep if you give him the ball. And so, like I said, I think offensively, you know, him and Isaiah Thomas, that pick and roll combination would be unstoppable, and then it would create open shots. And so you're right. And defensively, you mentioned it. I mean, the guy is still an athletic freak. I mean, he still is Superman that touched the top of the backboard. And so he's an intimidating force down there. And so why not go out there and get him? You know, everybody talks about these Brooklyn picks and that kind of thing. And I'm of the belief that the Brooklyn pick is not as valuable as everyone's making it out to be. I think when it's all said and done, Brooklyn will have the fourth worst record, and it could go either way. Sure, they can get a, you know, top one, two, or three, but it also could be a five or six if somebody jumps up and bumps you out. And so I would rather get a proven all-star right now instead of, you know, the potential of something.
Well, let's talk about those draft picks, because right now the Celtics are due for three first-rounders next year and I think five second-rounders. They also have 9 guaranteed roster spots for the team next year. There's just not enough space if they're going to draft 3 new players. It just doesn't seem very realistic. If there's stars not available, would you be, if you're Danny Ainge, open to kind of dealing one of those picks for maybe the Dallas pick for kind of a smaller player that would make an impact, maybe like a Shabazz Muhammad's been rumored, or maybe buying low on someone like a crazy Markieff Morris?
Yeah, I don't know if I give up a first rounder for those guys. Shabazz has shown flashes this season. He came in better shape, but I'm still trying to figure out where exactly he fits in with this roster. You know, I heard about those rumors as well. And so I don't know. That's a good question, but you're right. You can't draft, use all the picks. I mean, you can't have 3 more rookies on this team after drafting, you know, 3 rookies last year. And so I think you've got to move some of those picks. And if I'm Danny Ainge, I'm sure you'd like to move, you know, either your pick or the Dallas pick, package that with the David Lee to get a superstar kind of guy or a big kind of named guy. But I don't know if that guy is out there. I wouldn't give it up just for the sake of giving it up. Not at the trade deadline anyway. Talk to me, you know, in May and June when we get closer to the lottery and the NBA draft, then you try to deal those picks. But I don't think if you're Danny Ainge, you want to draft all those positions.
All right, Drapes, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you when the Celtics have Al Horford and Dwight Howard in their starting front court. Enjoy.
Exactly. Throw in Kyle Korver, too. Why don't you?
There you go.
For good measure.
Hey, you can never have enough Kyles in Boston, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, that was Kyle Draper of Comcast Sportsnet. Does a bit of everything. I was meaning to ask him if he's ever Jared Sullinger's ever thrown a towel on him, because that just seems disrespectful, and I don't know how Chris Mannix puts up with it.
What, you mean trade bait?
Trade bait. That was a good response the other night.
It was a nice way to report something.
Oh, that would be awesome if you actually had that rumor and was working it. But let's move forward to interview with Evan Turner. Before last night's game, everyone was waiting around, all the press was waiting around to talk to Doc and talk to Paul Pierce. And I showed up a little bit late. I was in the back. I couldn't hear what Doc was saying. I couldn't hear what Paul was saying. So I went into the Celtics locker room, decided to have a little sit-down interview with the main man, E.T. I asked him a number of questions. It was really a bunch of random things that had kind of been in my head for a while. But he says some interesting things, especially about free agency, the media while he was in Philly. He gives some insight into Brad Stevens, what he's like off the court. So here it is, my conversation with Evan before the Clippers game on Wednesday night.
It feels like you've done a really good job of kind of getting to exactly where you want to go in the spot and be able to pull up around the elbows. Is that something you're looking to do?
Yeah, I think that's always my MO to a certain extent. The biggest thing is not, looking for the pass too much. I think sometimes I get myself in trouble looking for the pass too much and not being as aggressive. But, you know, I've always been confident with getting to my spots and getting to my shots. And, I think I've been finishing relatively well. And, my pull-ups been going in. But, you know, I think as late as taking my shots when I have them, sometimes I'll overlook for somebody else. So it's been working well.
All right. You seem to have a pretty good relationship with Coach Stevens.
Yeah.
He seems kind of hyper-focused on basketball. Is there anything you can tell us about Stevens off the court that we wouldn't know?
I think, he knows when to work and he knows when to enjoy himself. You know, he pays attention.
Do you have any idea of how he enjoys himself other than watching film?
I think he likes watching sports just as much as anybody. And, he's a Cubs fan. he's aware of sports, football and things like that. And he reads books. And, he has two energetic kids, So I obviously like spending time with them when he gets a chance. And we have a cool staff. So he hangs out. He has fun. And he jokes as much as next
man. What kind
of music he listens to? Nah, I can only imagine country.
Country?
It wouldn't shock me if it was country. How old is Brad? 38? Maybe he might listen to rap. No. You guys ever heard him listen to rap? It's probably just country, huh?
I think it's country.
Yeah, probably country.
He was talking about JBs the other day.
Yeah, his kids probably like it. Yeah, so probably country more than anything. He's from Indiana.
All right, and then obviously with the logo shirt and the ET for president, I was wondering, we got the New Hampshire primaries just happened. I wonder what your platform would be for your candidacy for president.
I don't know. The presence would just be enough, and that's it,
Just going to show up?
Yeah, just show up and keep it real, man. Once I get in front of that microphone, I'll be able to win everybody over,
Just improvise?
Improvise. It's already all been written, It's already been set. You ask me a question, I'll tell my honest to God answer. That's it.
We got 8 days off after tonight. You got any special plans for the break?
Yeah, I'm just going to Jamaica tomorrow, and then I'll be in Ohio for the little,
the jersey ceremony,
yeah. And then that's it. Once we stay out of trouble once again. Try to keep that streak alive.
How long has that streak been going? When was the last time you were in trouble?
Last time I was in trouble. I don't know. It's been 27 great years. No problems, So.
Speaking of Ohio State.
The Ohio State,
I apologize. Yeah. Do you ever read Mark Titus's book?
No, I never checked it out because I was there for it. I've heard certain stories, and obviously, it's funny, but it's kind of super embellished. So, I think Titus is a cool dude. I always thought he was a great dude. I think some of the stuff he obviously wrote is his own personal opinion. And I think it's full of shit. But at the same time, people enjoyed it and stuff like that. He got from it what he wanted to get from it. And that's it. That's all I really think of. Too deep into it. I'm not one to, put locker room business out into a book for my own personal gain. But, hey, he did it. He rocked with it. And, once again, that club trail thing did a lot of great charity things, And You know, I respect them for what he did charity-wise, but the whole...
Didn't appreciate the nickname he gave you?
No, I mean, it's a joke. Like, you know, I probably called him way worse, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was, a jackass, you know, and he probably, caused a villain, but, we had that type of relationship where we always joked around and, enjoyed ourselves along that part. I think one thing he kind of undermined was, like, he got made fun of just as much as he hurt with us, you know what I'm saying? So, but it was still, it was cool. I think people enjoyed that book and they enjoyed the movement,
Would you ever write a book like that?
About other people?
Any interest?
If I wrote a book, it'd be about myself. I wouldn't write a book about somebody.
But people, there'd be characters in that book, like people you interact with at Ohio State. You have any interest in kind of telling your story?
Nah, I don't. I've never really sat down and thought of it. I've always been told I should because, adversity I've overcame and stuff like that. But, I think it's too early to write a book, you know what I'm saying? So maybe eventually one day, I guess. But nah, I tell people, or sit down and talk to you and have a conversation. It feels right to open up about it. I don't like so much stuff personally on blast. I think sometimes people not take it the wrong way, but I appreciate every situation I've ever been in, whether good or bad. I don't need like a pat on the back,
All right, sorry, I just thought of another one.
What's up?
You looking forward to being a free agent this summer, especially with the kind of the cap going up and the contracts they're going around?
No, I haven't really thought about it, to tell you the truth. I'm looking forward to the summer, I'll tell you that much. But, I don't really look at that stuff as much as most people do, The biggest thing is just, continue to find a situation where, my talents can be used in the right way. And, I'm happy to show up to work and play ball. Obviously, we'll all be blessed enough to make money doing what we love, but, I just want to continue to find inner peace and happiness and enjoying myself on the court and being able to play with guys and be in an atmosphere where I enjoy being there, that's an underrated aspect in a lot of things, So, free agency, I don't know when it opens up, but whenever it happens, we'll take care of it when it does,
Do you think guys kind of ignore that atmosphere aspect or kind of chase money or not take it into consideration?
I think sometimes people may do that, sometimes they may not know, Sometimes leaving a situation is already great. It's always the ideal thing. It's like what Tayshaun Prince told me back in the day when he won championship and he was a big deal or whatnot, and people want to move. He's like, look, I like being here, so it's my agent's job to get me the most money I could possibly do to be here because it's where I'm happy at, and I'm good, but there's reasons why I benefit from being here. You understand what I'm saying? So, I'm more realistic in that aspect. I've been in situations where I wasn't happy, and you go to a different situation that wasn't ideal. Wasn't ideal for me. I'll sit back and I'll assess whenever it's time to assess, but that's like 5 months away,
And then finally, the media likes to basically make judgments on all the players based on just their performance, so I'd like to kind of turn the tables. Do you have any assessment of how the media's performed this season?
The media's performed? No, they're cool. I've been in cities where people were like this. People made crazy assumptions or wrote crazy articles and never even came to practice, you know what I'm saying? So, situation I was in, it's like, man, me has been A++, because I was in a city where jackasses will hop on TV, try to talk like Skip Bayless or whatever, and not even show up to practice, not even be involved or write articles just to pay their rent, you know what I'm saying? And then, along with that, putting people's character into question. And whenever you're willing to do that for a buck, or you don't take advantage, or you don't really recognize what your words or what you write, how far that can go, then, you're wrong. And I don't think I've experienced that here. I think people are classy. I don't think people are arrogant or egotistical in this market, in my personal opinion. I haven't known it. So, I like the media here for sure.
Is there anything you wish these group of dudes did better, like covering the team or told better stories? Or
no, they're pretty good, man. I'm telling you, I was in the worst of the worst market. So, anything is way better than where I was at, So, they're cool. As long as you have some integrity behind what you write and have a reason for why you write it, and that's it. Explain it. Some people just say stuff and don't know what the hell they're talking about, and then they don't understand. They put it in a publication where thousands and thousands and thousands of people read a day, and people aren't mature enough to form their own opinion. They just run with it. You know, so it is what it is.
My biggest takeaway from that was his response to my question about Brad Stevens off the court. Maybe I'm a little bit weird, but I'm fascinated by Brad Stevens, just who he is when he's not talking or watching or doing anything around basketball, because he seems super, super obsessed that I just want to get to know his thoughts on anything besides basketball. And when I asked Evan, he immediately laughed and really gave me a nothing answer, and I don't think he knows.
I think he was grasping for straws to try to give us something, but he had no idea. He didn't even know what music he listened to.
He said he likes sports, he reads books, and that he probably listens to country, but that's
because he's from Indiana.
Because he's from Indiana, but yeah, he had no idea. And the two video guys who were next to us when we were doing the interview, they kind of laughed when I asked that question too. So Brad Stevens, the enigma, still continues.
We'll have to have him on the podcast.
I'm dying
to
have a sit down with Brad Stevens, and I would ask him zero basketball. Oh, that'd be a waste. I'd probably ask him a bunch of basketball questions, but there would be a hearty section about just what his life was like pre-basketball. I want to know about his favorite bands,
his marketing job.
Yeah, his first concert, just everything besides basketball with Brad Stevens, because that's fascinates me.
I can't remember right now, and someone correct us on Twitter, but I know I definitely remember him talking about his first concert. He definitely at some point.
Are you
in the
sure
last
you're not
years,
talking about our own podcast where we asked Adam Himmelsbach what he thought the first concert was?
That could be it.
Yeah, because I've been upset. I've been upset.
I thought
with
I remember
Rex.
Him. He definitely talked about a concert that he went to at some point. Maybe Adam had that answer. We'll have to go back into the archives.
Another interesting thing from the conversation
a legitimate thing
was when I asked him about free agency, and he gave the typical, I'm not worried about that, it's 5 months from now. But there were some kind of snippets in there when he was talking about being comfortable in the environment, and it's the I think he said he talked to Tayshaun Prince. It's the agent's job to get him as much money in a place where he feels comfortable. And it certainly feels like he's found his groove in Boston. He's certainly been embraced by the fans of Boston and the media like us. So I don't know what the Celtics are going to do because they have tons of cap flexibility and they're certainly going to chase stars. But I certainly think the Celtics would like to have him back. He seems to be one of Brad Stevens' favorite player. And we found out today that Danny Ainge is actually going to be going to his jersey retirement ceremony at Ohio State over this break. So who knows what will happen, but I thought it was an interesting answer.
What more could Brad and Danny do to try to cement the fact that they value him? I mean, Brad has really gone out of his way throughout the past 12 months basically to make a note of how hard Evan has worked to improve defensively, and I think that's become pretty apparent as a rebounder as well. And Danny is, you know, Danny has clearly expressed how valuable Evan is, and we know Jared Soldier is going to be there, and they're very close as well. Evan's been a crucial locker room presence for this team, someone that I think balances out maybe Jay Crowder's intensity really well. But while Evan is a very kind of silly and laid back guy, he works hard and he's improved in a lot of ways. We're kind of his career almost restarted, because don't forget he was scoring like 18 points a game with Philadelphia a few years ago and on a good team. I mean, it wasn't the current Philly team. This was the team that they stripped down. So I mean, he was a legitimate NBA scorer at one point, and he's had to kind of break it all down and rebuild it back up as a more valuable player to his team. And he's really hit that stride lately with this with the Celtics, especially the way that Stevens has figured out how him and Isaiah Thomas in the fourth quarter can be a really good partnership. And it's really enhanced both of their games. And of course, in that Clipper game, which we keep referring to on this podcast, he was instrumental playing off of Isaiah to get that win for them. And the way that he talked in his interview, I think he realizes that after a terrible media experience, and he didn't name it, but it was Philadelphia.
Yes,
I think
that's
pretty obvious. And I mean, Philly's notorious for it. And as much as people think Boston's a tough sports town, I think the general beat writers are a lot more fair than in Philadelphia. And then Indiana, where it's just a terrible fit for him there, and that was a mess. He's gone through that gauntlet of learning how valuable it is to be in a place where you're a fit, and they want you there, and you like it there. And he's not going to walk away from that unless there's no offer for him on the table. The Celtics have enough money and they have bird rights. They're going to be making him a pretty good offer.
I would be shocked if he ended up somewhere else at the start of next season, just because you hear Brad Stevens talk about how much he loves the game, and it doesn't sound like Evan's going to be asking for an outrageous contract. He probably will get better offers, but again, that real focus on the environment he feels comfortable in, was my biggest takeaway from the sit-down with Evan Turner. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the WEEI Celtics podcast. Jared of CLNS Radio and the Garden Report, tell them where the Twitters is.
The Twitters is at CLNS underscore Jared Weiss. And of course, as we said off the top of the show, CLNS Radio is powering this podcast now. We're going to have all sorts of distribution, all sorts of fun descriptions on the podcast page. So go to CLNS Radio to find this podcast, as well as, of course, WEEI. And you can find us on Stitcher and on iTunes. And please subscribe. Please give us a 5-star rating and explain why this podcast has changed your life and made you a basketball savant.
You can just talk to us. I just want to hear any comments at all. If you ask us a question, I feel obligated to mention on the podcast. Last week we talked to Danny LaRue about boners, and that was a fan question. So we're pretty obligated to talk about anything. So get at me on Twitter. I'm at Sam Packard NBA, formerly WEI Celtics. I know there's been some confusion there,
but you're still the Black White Frank White.
Whoa! The White Black Frank Jesus. White. I could not be the Black White Frank White. That would make no sense. One, Frank White was originally white. He is played by Christopher Walken in the movie King of New York. And the Black Frank White is Biggie. So thus, I am the White Black Frank White, the Caucasian notarized Big. I'm glad I was able to explain that, just in case people were slightly confused. But that's the scenario.
With great diction, might I add.
Oh, well, thank you. That's what the White Black Frank White brings to the table.
Well, that's going to do it for us. We'll see you on next week's episode. We're going to have a trade special for you. There's going to be something going down, and we're going to yell about it.
Spectacular!
So I just got back from the Yeezy Season 3 presentation from Kanye West, and it was kind of an absolute disaster. we're gonna play some new Kanye, The Life of Pablo, to take you out. We'll see you next week on the WEEI Celtics podcast, powered by CLNS Radio.
Only Pablo I care about is Pablo Sanchez. Backyard baseball for life.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.